Do you like geometry?
No.
Catherine? What? Why not?
I haven't thought about it in 20 years.
Well, I love geometry. I'm looking at it right now. My cat is sitting at the window right next to me, and he's looking outside, and a pigeon just landed 10 seconds ago in the street, and the pigeon's slowly walking towards the house, so it's slowly walking towards the cat. What I love about it is as the angle of approach changes from the pigeon, so too does the angle of the cat. The cat keeps getting lower and lower and lower as the bird gets closer and closer and closer. And I'm seeing this, and I'm seeing the cat is peeking out just above the seat that we have outside.
Okay.
And so his head is in relation to the seat is always staying constant based on what the pigeon is seeing. So as far as the pigeon seeing, he doesn't know that there's a cat back there. He just sees the chair.
Oh.
My cat can't pounce on him because there's a window there, but he's ready. He's ready.
Wait, is your cat inside or outside? I'm confused.
He's inside at the moment, but he can go outside any time. I'm actually lying. That happened like half an hour ago. But the magic of podcasting means we can lie. We can lie. We can make things up. I'm not lying about this, though. We're welcoming Meatloaf into the studio today. Hello, Meatloaf. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, sad news.
What? He's right here. How is that sad? Don't you want to meet Meatloaf?
I read that Meatloaf passed away.
Oh, yeah. See, another lie. You don't never know when I'm telling the truth, do you?
No.
You better read the news. I could be lying to you right now.
Meatloaf, the artist.
The singer.
The singer.
Artist is, in my mind, a little bit borderline for him.
Okay. I just keep seeing him in Rocky Horror.
That's a good point. That was a weird movie. I don't know. Does that still hold up? Can people still watch that? Do you have to be...
People still watch it.
I thought you might have to be drugged out on crack cocaine or something to watch that. Okay. Because that was weird stuff. I was reading one of the articles about his death today, and they say he, you know, co-starred with Brad Pitt in Fight Club. And I'm thinking, I watched that movie. I remember Meatloaf being in that movie, but I don't remember him being a co-star.
Right.
He was more of a small time character. He was a 2-bit character in that, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's just weird to say that he was co-starring when he wasn't really. I don't know.
Anyway, well, rest in peace, Meatloaf, and your Meatloaf. I hope he captures the pigeon.
Don't call my cat Meatloaf.
I thought your cat was Meatloaf.
What are you talking about?
Didn't you say Meatloaf is here?
Wow, my own co-host doesn't understand my dark humor. Okay.
Was it like a ghost joke?
I'm just lying. No, it was a whole bad thing about how I can lie on the podcast. I said that the cat thing happened half an hour ago.
Oh, I thought your cat's name was Meatloaf. Oh, for God's sake. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you should be. Gonna have to edit all that out.
Are you?
Obviously.
I hope so, yeah, obviously.
So did you take my challenge last week and order some Huel?
I looked at the website, and then I put it down, and then I looked at it again because I couldn't commit. And I thought, you know, I'm going to give it a day or three and see what comes up on my targeted ads. And if anything doesn't, listen to me. Just listen.
You just changed the rules. The challenge was to go buy Huel. I dared you to buy Huel.
I know you dared me, but I also have to make sure I'm going to use stuff. And it wasn't like super inexpensive. Anyway, so long story short, I went ahead and I gave it a couple days and I thought, well, maybe we should buy our own targeted ads. Like, who's targeting me? And one of the things that targeted me was this Hivebrands.com, H-I-V-E brands. And I looked at it and they had me pegged 100% sustainable, you know, vegetarian. I mean,
bullshit.
All of this. I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. I got onto their website in love. They had a special where I could order $50 worth of stuff and get a free gift.
Of what stuff?
Well, I bought two things of organic tea. I got some shampoo, tea, Earl Grey, and English breakfast. I needed some anyway, and the price was the same as if I'd gone to fries or something about it. So
$50 sounds like a little expensive.
No, I mean, I got a lot of stuff. I got shampoo, the shampoos that are in little bars, like the bar shampoo, so there's no packaging.
Oh, yeah, that's a bunch of nonsense too.
Well, I'm going to try them. I got two. Okay. One's like facial, it has like tea tree oil in it. It sounds lovely. And then I got another one that sounds like coconut. And I love coconut. Then I got a coconut face.
Why do you want to bathe in vegetables and nuts?
Because it smells good. And then I got some facial cleanser, and I got a bunch of chocolate from my dad. I knew he'd like it, and it just looks quite yummy.
Oh, boy.
So I'm excited. So I spent like $53, and I qualified for their order. And I think they send you like a little sustainable bag, and there's some other stuff in it. I don't know. you could look at the website, hivebrands.com. Oh, hivebrands.com.
Oh, I'm not going to look at that. I'm sorry. This is...
So anyway.
Yes.
I'll update on the products. They're in transit.
Oh, boy.
I'm so excited. I really liked this website. So anyway, maybe I am changing the rules of the challenge, but I'm starting to pay a lot more attention. The dare.
Have I turned you into a good consumer? You'd blindly buy anything that comes up on Instagram now?
I'm going to look and see. I mean, some of these targeted ads, now I'm getting a lot of stuff for Korean grocery delivery, which seems a bit disingenuous when I could just walk down the street to Seoul Market.
Not disingenuous, it's just easier. Okay.
Well, I don't want to support someone that's not local, and I'd rather
that's
support
fine.
Them.
That's fine, I understand.
So. But I looked at all the websites, and they were kind of interesting.
I get a lot of DraftKings and other betting type things. I don't know why Caesars thinks I'm going to bet money. I've never bet money on a sports game. I don't watch the sports games. That's my targeted ads, mostly.
I haven't gotten anything. So anyway, I'll throw it back to you. Why didn't you buy the Huel since it was your targeted ad?
Because I dared you to do it.
I made you do it.
Because I don't have any money.
Well, like I do.
Money. Yes, of course you have money. You can sell your car.
I should sell my car. Yeah, I had to get my tire fixed.
Do you remember why I wasn't to buy the Huel?
I don't recall. I was racking my pea brain, and I can't remember why.
Because I have the air fryer. I don't need any Huel.
Oh, right. You said the air fryer. Yeah. And I have my toaster oven and a stove and a pan.
So you haven't gotten your tire fixed yet?
I did get the tire fixed.
Oh, okay. That's fine. So we're going to talk about emerging artists today?
Let's talk about emerging artists today.
You asked me what the definition was last week.
Yes, I did. And I sent you some articles. Did you just enjoy them immensely?
Some of them were not so bad. I mean, kind of dumb on some levels.
Right,
and,
right,
and the
right.
other ones fed into my whole notion that the art world is a deep hole of... evil nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm going to jump ahead.
Jump ahead.
And find this quote. In talking about the art world, someone talked about it as being opaque, unregulated, and exploited by heavily invested forces.
Who said that? I love that.
Oh, that was in the article you probably didn't read. It was
I did read it, but...
linked. No.
Oh, the link.
Yes.
I didn't read that article.
So what's your definition of an emerging artist?
Well, that's what I wanted to find out, because when you go to shows and you see this emerging artist thing, it's like, to me, it was just someone who was deemed to be somewhat talented and they're hoping to promote their work. That's all I thought it was. But now I'm beginning to think that it's really more, like you say, more of a marketing thing, like where people in the industry.
Well, I didn't say that.
Oh, you didn't?
Yet.
Okay. But where people in the industry are looking for, like, who's going to be my next investment? And I'm not sure who's making these decisions. Everyone bandies the term about, you know, the emerging artist term. Whether you go
well,
to...
Well, not everyone.
Like, a lot of people
it,
do.
It does have a specific meaning. I think you've seen it enough that you...
It feels like it's everywhere. Like, Phoenix Center for the Arts had an emerging artist show. I mean, they do that periodically.
Sure. That's pretty normal. That's one of the things you can quote, sell about the work. And it also it describes what you're going to be seeing. So an emerging artist, this has always been my view, is someone who has some built-up reputation, has some built-up body of work, but is starting to break through, starting to have some successful shows and some sales, but hasn't quite yet gotten to the point where they're, quote, a mid-career artist, where they've done this for a while and they know how to do it and they're doing it successfully. So an emerging artist is someone who's just breaking through the surface,
okay,
basically. And this can be, as several of these articles point out, this can be a young artist, this can be an old artist, it doesn't matter. You can be working for 30 years before you actually becoming an emerging artist. But, you know, you can have an unsuccessful career for 30 years and then you finally find your thing and you take off.
Okay.
As opposed to mid-career artist who has already got that underway.
Right.
They got everything kind of sorted out and they are consistently producing work, even though it doesn't have to be the same kind of work. They can be still developing and growing. And I've known lots of these. When I had my Houston gallery, I had several really solid mid-career artists who were working every day, producing consistently good work, even if the work wasn't always the same. Christy Lifman was one artist that I represented who had different strains of work, and she was also a muralist. And, you know, I always loved looking at her stuff because it would always be a little bit surprising. And then there's the established artist. I guess she was kind of in between mid-career and established. Established artist is someone who has a large body of work and can be reliably counted on to produce new work and to have prices, pretty consistent pricing
okay.
at that point, you know. Probably well over 10 grand per piece. would be my assessment. But it, you know, that's also kind of variable. I mean, everyone in the art world, in the gallerists of the art world, want you to think that a seasoned artist like that is going to have prices over $10,000. But if you're a successful artist and you're painting a lot of paintings, like if you do a couple of paintings a week, that's a lot of paintings. You don't have to be selling them for $10,000. So you can still be an established artist without having to reach into that price category, in my opinion.
Okay.
That first article you sent me was How to Look at Emerging Artists and Recognize a Future Star. That was kind of a funny title to me.
That's why it grabbed my attention. Why do we have to recognize a future star? It rubbed me the wrong way, and then I got interested in the topic.
Well, there are financial benefits for getting on board early.
Right. Oh, definitely. For the collector, not for the artist.
Well, for everyone. If you see talent that's an emerging talent and you buy that talent, then you're investing in your own quote collection, but you're also investing in the artist, and the artist is getting paid.
Right.
That's great for what artist doesn't want to get paid?
Exactly.
And, you know, it wasn't a bad article. And what was kind of funny, though, is they had basically a collector guide, and I made a list of their suggestions. Shall we
go
through
them? Yeah, go through the list.
So for a new collector guide, these are the things you need to go through to kind of vet the artist and make sure that you're not buying into some wacko or someone who's just someone bored at home doing crap like me. You don't want to you don't want to get suckered into buying artwork from James.
Why not?
We'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, first suggestion they make is visit the studio.
Okay.
Ever had anyone visit your studio, Catherine? Any potential collectors?
No.
Really? Okay. This is something that's pretty common. When I was a gallerist, I would have people do that. And you get to see the artists in their natural environment. This does not work for all artists, though, because some artists work in their kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that's not really much of a studio visit. Don't take that as a rule of thumb that they have to have a particularly great, amazing studio. The next one is art education. What is their education? You know, if they have a decent educational background, this gives you some feedback in the system telling you that, you know, maybe this person is legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's very flexible, though. You don't have to have an education in art to make art.
Right.
The next one, though, is kind of bread and butter, and that's exhibition history. Where have they shown? What have they shown?
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that can be very small or very big. You know, if it's been a couple of years they've been showing, again, that shows some momentum in the career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The next level down on that is to see where they've been showing. And if they've been showing like a public exhibition curated by a museum or a larger foundation or just somebody who may not be a friend or a family member or something, you know, something that's more objective, that's a real good key indicator that they may have something going on there. And then the last thing they point out is media coverage. Where are they being reported? Is Art News talking about them? Are they in the local paper? That's a pretty big one, too. Even if it's just the local paper, if someone's doing a review on them, that can be a big sign to whether or not they're good or not. I will point out that the problem with researching artists like this is the danger of becoming friends with the artist. And then you're going to lose your objectivity and your perspective. That's to their benefit. And it's to your detriment.
Right.
If you want to be a serious collector. Because it's hard to see things out of context. But the funniest thing about this, Catherine, as to what you were talking about earlier...
What?
By these standards, I'm an established artist.
Are you?
I have had several shows of my own. I've had several mixed shows. I've had awards. I've had, except for media, I guess I haven't been in the media very much. You could follow all these rules and get to the point where you think, well, James must be a great established artist. I should invest in him. And you'd be completely dead wrong. As much as this guide helps, it really doesn't, because art isn't that easy to pigeonhole.
It isn't easy to pigeonhole.
Yeah, I was living in Westchester. I had several group shows with the Westchester Art Guilds and things like that, and I won several awards from them, but it was such a small and irrelevant organization that it didn't really mean much.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for explaining that, James. Is there such a thing as a pre-emerging artist?
You can say that.
Like a zygote artist?
Sure, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. An infant.
Not even infant. Or you could
say pre-emerging. Like French, like artist infante or something like that, whatever. Just make it sound European.
I think we should make up our own term. To me, it seemed like it was a way to acknowledge an artist in terms of their career, but it was also a way to assure that people who are investing their money will get some bang for their buck at some point in their holding. And I felt like the term was less of a term of art for an artist than it is for a collector. That was kind of my point.
Oh, I can see that very much. It's definitely a marketing buzzword. I think it goes both ways, though. I think it is a genuine way to categorize an artist and give mm-hmm. them give you a sense of where they are in their career.
Of where they are. Mm-hmm.
But anytime you're talking about the art world, someone's going to take that and, you know,
run with it.
Turn it around and make a buck off of it.
They're going to run with it. Right.
Probably should have sent you the link to this, but I kind of assume since you do deep dives and it looked like you did a deep dive on this topic that you would have read the linked article.
So I didn't even see the link. I mean, God knows when I read this and I see the link now.
Well, okay, yeah, it doesn't matter. The article that was linked to it, because they kept talking about zombie formalism, which mm-hmm. I didn't really understand what that was, so I just read the linked article, which didn't really talk much about it, but it was a good article about mm-hmm. how investors are destroying the art world, and that was titled GoPro: The Hyper-Professionalization of the Emerging Artist. So this is right up your alley. And this is surprisingly right. enough in art news, which again, I usually find to be fairly fatuous, but it was good. Right. It was a good one. And the gist of the article was basically gallery owners, unscrupulous gallery owners. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that repetitive?
Yes. Like we're done. Yes.
We're going out and buying up young artists' work mm-hmm. and basically doing a pump and dump. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but in the stock trading world, it's when you go and you buy stock that's low and then you pump out a bunch of fake news that's saying this is stock is doing great and everybody buys it and then you dump it and it's high and then, you know, the reality sits in that this stock isn't worth anything and then it crashes again. That's what the gallery owners are doing. They're buying a bunch of young artists' artwork and then they say, oh man, this artist is really hot. And of course it's hot because you can see he's sold 20 pieces in the past month.
Right.
So he must be super hot.
Right.
And then the gallery can turn around and sell those works to new art collectors. And then the market goes cold because there's nothing after that. It's a pump and dump.
It's terrible.
So that was this article was describing how that goes. This is a great quote from that article.
Okay.
I'm going to read it verbatim.
Okay.
Quote, "The feeling about the market here is so disgusting that you never hear any more of a thought for itself. Painters and painting go up and down like Wall Street stock."
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who said that?
You?
No, I didn't. That was a quote. I'm going to quote myself.
Who said that?
Duchamp.
Oh, really?
In 1928.
Wow.
Nearly 100 years ago, he was talking to Alfred Stieglitz, a famous gallerist of the early 20th century and husband to Georgia O'Keeffe.
Right.
I'm so envious of him for that. But anyway, I digress. 1928, so it was nearly 100 years ago, they were complaining about how fraudulent the New York art scene was. And let me tell you, Catherine, things haven't gotten any better.
Isn't that interesting?
Because, as I mentioned earlier, the system is still opaque, unregulated, and exploited by heavily invested forces. And that goes mm-hmm. to the point about the pump and dump.
Pump and dump.
It was a good article that had lots of these examples of this happening. And it talked about the zombie formalism, which is one of the things that the art world several years ago now, this mm-hmm. was written in 2016, was pumping and dumping. And it was really hot for 2 years, and then boom, it just turned ice cold overnight.
Right.
And zombie formalism, as I understand it now, is basically just abstract expressionist type paintings. So mm-hmm. it's really kind of a regurgitation of what we went through in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good explanation of it because it's like a formalized version of abstract expressionism
mm-hmm.
with a kind of a zombie approach. You just kind of splatter it on. Like you're not even thinking. Like there's no progression to the next level of quote art.
Yeah, like all the pour paintings, the splash paintings.
Pretty much. And the article also points out that it's not just the gallery and the artists, it's also the curators. This is a great another quote. Quote, "Museum curators cave to these pressures too, mm-hmm. validating the trend by staging exhibitions of market darling artists collected by their trustees with a lack of scruples that give the worst insider tradings a run for their money."
Wow.
Insider traders. Once the collector has bought some of these young artists' works, then they put some pressure on the museums at which they are trustees mm-hmm. onto the curators, say, "Hey, you know, you really should show this person." Mm-hmm. And there's no regulation of this. This is not regulated at all. So this is way better than working on Wall Street, because you actually have to have SEC filings and you have your,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're legally responsible for that. You can go to jail if you screw around with that stuff.
Right.
Not in the art world.
Not in the art world.
No rules.
That's crazy.
The funny thing was, when I was out in Houston, I actually got a little bit of a taste of that, not the curator part, but the other thing they talked about in the article was how this one poor guy Yeah, I think he was a gallery owner. He said he just wanted to go and meet the guy at his studio and just talk to him, get some background information, mm-hmm. just for research purposes, right. not for a show or anything, just to talk, which is something I did all the time as a gallerist in Houston. Mm-hmm. And he went there and he was met by like three professional people. There was like a curator there and a media guy. And he realized that he'd walked into not just a low key research thing where he just wanted to go meet the guy, but they had put on this whole presentation, like they were trying to sell him this. And at the end of they finally asked this guy a question. So what show do you think our client can work with you on?
Oh, wow.
Really pushing it, really making it over professionalized kind of. And that's the point of the article, the hyper-professionalization of the emerging artist. And I got a little bit of that when I was in Houston. I knew this guy was making some kind of nice furniture, and that's what I was selling furniture and art in Houston.
I love it.
And so I went to meet him, not realizing that he was aligned very closely with like the preeminent interior designer in Houston at the time. We'll just name him Kelly because...
No, you don't want to say.
Well, that was his name.
Okay. Oh, what's his name? Okay.
Yeah. That was the interior designer. Anyway, I went there and expecting just to, you know, a normal kind of low-key, chill...
Right.
Looking at the work in the studio and stuff. But, you know, they hit me with a little bit more professional presentation than I was expecting, mm-hmm. Which was fine because I was actually interested and they were interested and I didn't realize how closely that related to Kelly was, so... Which would have been great for me because, you know, if a gallery gets into a good working relationship with a interior designer, that is a great segue for the work, right? You mm-hmm. sell it to the interior designer mm-hmm. and they sell it on to their clients. So that was a great experience until Kelly came to my gallery. Everything was going really well.
Okay.
Until one of my other artists that I represent came in.
Okay.
We'll just say that she came in. And made a beeline to Kelly because Kelly was pretty famous in Houston.
Okay.
And just started gabbing his ear off. I didn't even get a chance to say a word, not introduce her or anything. Mm-hmm. She just went, Kelly just had this look of complete, not revulsion, but surprise and unpleasantness. Because mm-hmm. this woman was just going on and like they knew they were the best friends forever.
Oh, no.
You know that kind of vibe people can give off?
Right.
They just want to insert them. Well, Kelly left and I didn't speak to him again after that. So thanks, April. Thanks, April.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. I that was a bit of a sub-rant.
That was a sub-rant. That was a good one. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, emerging artists. I purchased one piece from an emerging artist once.
Well, how many artworks have you purchased over the years?
Not a ton.
A dozen?
Less than a dozen. I don't really collect.
Why do you call this one, quote, an emerging artist purchase?
But it was at Phoenix Center for the Arts, and they had a show like that they do, or they used to do at the end of each season, like emerging artists, and they'd set up this whole gallery, and everyone would put their work in there. I actually knew the gal. She was one of the friends of the Beat Museum when I was doing volunteer work there. This is years ago. And she invited us all. She was really excited, and she was doing some work in clay, a little bit of sculpting. And it's kind of like a sculpted mask. Mm-hmm. With this really interesting bird, and it was fired in the rack who they fired it. So it must have been more ceramic. Obviously, it was clay. And so they did it in rack who. I love rack who because my mom used to work a lot in rack who. We had a rack who kiln here for years. And I just fell in love with it, and I bought it. But, you know, I don't know if she emerged. She was doing it for fun. I mean, she was doing her art because it made her happy.
I think there are two ways to buy art. And one of them is to buy things that you like, that you relate to, that do something for you.
I still like it.
You did. Yeah. Like you did. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a good way to buy it. Or you can treat it like a stock and you can try right. to play the stock game. But we are not equipped to do that.
No.
You and I.
No.
I don't
no,
think
no.
we'd even be allowed into the galleries where this kind of nonsense happens. We are not. We don't. I don't. At least I shouldn't speak for you, but I don't have the clothing that would let me gain access to a gallery like that.
Well, neither do I.
Or the swagger.
I think that the emerging artist, that clarifies things for me. I'm glad you liked the article.
The other way to buy it is, as I said, buy it like a stock, but you have to be prepared to go in there and mm-hmm. understand the whole system and who you're talking to. Like, you have to understand, did this gallerist just buy 20 paintings and is he pumping and dumping? And if so, make sure you're on the right side of that pump and dump.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's really not about the art at all. It's just about trying to manipulate the market.
I have been in galleries like that where you walk in and you instantly feel unwelcome. Mm-hmm. I've often wondered what that's about, because art to me, with the expression and trying to, you know, encourage some, you know, elicit a response, and like the whole process of art to me is so much more pure than that. Maybe I'm just, you know, basking in my naivete. But that always made me really uncomfortable.
You are basking in your naivete about that, but please don't lose that, because that's the only thing that tethers any kind of value to art to the real world, is its actual value.
Right.
Instead of its purported made-up value that people are just pumping and dumping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I could think of a couple instances. You know, Sedona is a great place for that vibe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And there are certain places in Scottsdale that I'm not sure what's still open down there, but you'd walk in and just instantly... You know, even if it was art that I'm not into, like some of the quote-unquote cowboy art or that whole genre, you know, it didn't matter because they knew what they were marketing.
And your shoes weren't expensive enough?
Obviously, whatever.
I know that vibe 100%.
Right.
And it's all about attitude. One of the artists I represented I didn't represent him. A dear friend of mine in Houston, who was a fabulous painter,
right.
Very solid career, selling his works for easily $10,000. His name was Omar.
Omar.
One of the genuinely nicest, kindest guys I've ever known. He wouldn't show at my gallery, and we understood each other. We didn't have to talk about. We understood my gallery was not quite to the level that it needed to be for his work. I was more of an emerging artist gallery in a mid-career gallery, not an established gallery artist gallery. He was my secret playing card I was going to hold in my deck when I was talking to Kelly about the interior designer. I was like, well, you know, I have this stuff, but I also know this one guy. But anyway, never got that far, unfortunately, with Kelly. But I did go, oh boy, one of the most excruciating experiences of my art career was when I actually went to Omar's studio. We were just hanging out. I was helping him with his website, really low, nothing fancy, just low key. I got there and he was talking to some buyers.
Okay.
And these two anorexic women, you know, mid-40s, were just drooling all over him, wanting to buy his work. And he could not stand it because they had no idea what the hell they were looking at. They were just there because they were wealthy and they wanted to spend money. And the thing was, this is one of my learning moments, he was genuinely repulsed by the vibe he was getting from these women.
Okay.
And he couldn't help but put that vibe out, that repulsion. They were eating it up.
Oh, because it made it more.
Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, because it made it more exclusive. It's like going into a restaurant when you can't get a reservation for the next 2.5 years or something.
And you know, the wealthy people who have more money than taste, when they're used to running all over people, but when they hit the person who suddenly doesn't want to sell to them, like they don't want to have anything to do with, that's like catnip to them.
Right.
It's kind of hard to pull off. A lot of people do it either through genuine revulsion, like Omar, or actually, I probably shouldn't be using his name, but
probably not. Well, it doesn't. I don't know.
It was one of those learning moments.
Right, right.
It's all about attitude. Really, oh God, there's so much attitude in it.
There's so much attitude. I just get really turned off by that. And there was a time when I had money that I wouldn't have dropped it on, you know, thousands of dollars on any piece of work. But I mean, they never know what you're really packing if you walk into a place. I mean, you could look.
Well, that's why I said that comment about the shoes. They look at your shoes and see if you've got nice shoes, can you afford the place you just walked into?
Right.
That's the old sales trick.
Exactly.
Maybe we could use some of that attitude on the show. Maybe if we were a little more condescending to our audience, we'd get more respect.
I think we get respect.
I respect you.
I respect you.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
No, but our audience, we shouldn't be, you know what?
What?
We should just stop talking to them right now.
Okay.
See how they like that.
Okay.
They should, you know, hopefully we'll get some great feedback and they'll just need more of us.
Okay.
Because we're withholding.
Okay. Yeah, so let's withhold any further information. Are we done?
We're done.
I'm turning it off.